Welcome to Spilling the Tea with your host, Tara Byers. On our last episode, I spoke about how I became a hairdresser, hairstylist, and a salon owner. I want to get into how I decided to go out on my own. I worked at a commission salon for about 5 years. And to recap, I said some of this earlier. One November, I was looking at my service cells. If you are a hairstylist, you know that your service cells are how much people pay for you to get your hair done by them. In November, my service cells were $14,600. That does not include my tip. In 1 month, people paid over $14,000 for me to do their hair. After sitting back and doing the math, I was only getting 45% of that. I was already buying my own foils, providing my own brushes, providing my own color bowls. I was already providing a lot of stuff. So I was like, what is this salon doing for me? I haven't got training. I haven't gotten any more classes to expand my education. I felt like I was stuck. I hated doing hair. And I couldn't see how them getting 55% of $14,000 was worth it. I'm not gaining anything. I barely got paid time off. I think when I was there, after the first year, you only got 24 hours of paid time off at minimum wage. And I was there a year and a couple months ago. And the pay time off was still at like $9 an hour. I don't even know if that's legal. It was insane. I also was struggling getting a promotion. I finally got a promotion. I remember I just left my daughter's dad. It was me paying all my bills. I was stressed. I was fucking scared. I was working as much as I could, trying to get as many clients in, trying to make as much money as I can to pay my bills. I remember getting a message from the owners, and they're like, hey, will you come to our house afterwards? And I was like, yeah, no problem. And I was already upset. I didn't get a promotion, and their reasoning was, your numbers are close to where we want them to be, but you just have a lot going on in your life right now. Yes, I do have a lot going on in my life, but more money would have helped. So after a long day of work, I show up to their house. They have this ginormous, gorgeous house. Show up to their house. I'm covered in fucking hair color. My hair is in a bun. I have no makeup on. I'm stressed. I'm tired. And they give me $50 and a flat screen TV. And they're like, we know that you didn't get a promotion, but we want to help you. And I was like, I don't know. If this is like, oh my God, thank you, or like, oh my God, what? Like, so confused. And gathering all of the things that I was going through, there were some mean girls at the salon that was making my life living hell. I was like, now there's no better time. I've always wanted to be in the Short North. That's where I'm now. That's always been my goal. And I was like, you know what? If I go out, my slowest months are going to be January, February. I get my tax return. I'll have that money to fall back on. So I put in almost 3 weeks. I ended up only working 2 weeks. They called all my clients, canceled all of my appointments without telling me. And I was like, yeah, like, that's cool. I remember I was leaving one day and I didn't say bye to anybody. It was a really awkward tension. My clients could feel it. I was still obeying by my non-compete, not telling my clients where I was going, anything like that. I was going well over 10 miles. And I remember leaving the salon and one of the girls were like, since you're not going to say bye to us. And I was like, no, because you guys are being rude and petty. Like every single person left the salon before me. They got flowers. They got a cute little letter and like, wish well upon the minute I leave because you're making so much money on me. You're so petty about it. That is the one thing I hate about this industry. So I finally went out on my own. I went in with, a girl I knew, and she was definitely a newer hairstylist. When I was on vacation in July, she messaged me and told me, like, this just isn't for me. And I'm not very sure why, but we had a huge falling out. We just don't talk really much anymore. I'm so happy for her. Looks like she's doing amazing, though. So I was in a double loft by myself for a couple months, and I hated it. I love doing what I do, but I hated the thought of other hairstylists being in the same position I was in. And I'm such a leader, as if you want to say. I have a great work ethic, and I love to teach. It is literally my passion. But my other passion is how to make money, how to survive this life. And I got a message from a girl. I'm pretty still close with her. And she was just like, I'm moving to Detroit. Do you want my loft? And I was like, hell yes. This is the time. Let's do it. And I expanded. So within a year, I left a commission salon. I want to say I was making $72,000 is what I grossed the last year at that salon, into making $100,000 this year in the salon. And that's not even with my books full, because I am still rebuilding my clients. And I cannot wait to see where this year brings me. But the person I am now is not the person I was then. I tend to run into people that knew me when I worked at a commission salon, and they're always like, oh my gosh, you've changed so much. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of what happens when we leave a toxic work environment. I think that there are two different types of hairstylists in this world. You have somebody that thinks outside of the box, somebody that's always going to experiment, somebody that's going to research what they want to do. They're going to research how to do the 90s blowout trend, how to cut your layers the exact way that you want cut. They're going to stay on top of stuff like that. They're going to be trying out new color brands if they feel like the color brand isn't working for them. And then you have stylists that are very type A, that are like, no, I know how to do it this way, and I'm going to continue to do it this way. They don't want to like stray out of sight of their comfort zone because they're comfortable, which those stylists are also still really good. All of these stylists are good, but I believe that the stylists that are always thinking outside of the box, the stylists that are always trying new things, always trying new products, always researching what's in these products, I believe that those stylists are the ones setting the trend. They're the ones doing something different. They're the ones that are cutting your hair as that mob wife era is approaching. They're the ones doing that. They're the ones that are researching different ways to apply your extensions to make sure that they work best for your head. They're the ones that are going and being like, oh, you have a really small head. Your occipital bone is lower. Let's place these differently so that works out for you. Not when I took a class, they said two finger widths above your ear, and I'm going to place them right there every time. It blows my mind as a hairstylist when my clients come in and they're like, it just wasn't doing it. Like, she just kept doing the same thing over and over again. I'm like, I get that. And I think that's where in the industry we fail to realize, like, it is also still our job to ask, what don't you like about what I did your hair last time? You have to take responsibility for what you're doing. You have to retake responsibility that they may not like what you did. And that's okay. That is completely okay. It is okay to make mistakes in this industry. It's okay to not make every single person that sits in your chair happy. That's okay. It's okay to turn down a client because you guys just don't mesh together. But what's not okay is judging your client for anything. I remember overhearing in like another loft, a hairstylist, like this client came in and sat down. And she was like, I'm going to box dye my hair tomorrow. I only budgeted enough money this week or this month for a haircut. And this stylist roasted her. And it broke my heart so fucking bad. Because in reality, like, this girl didn't have to go to you to do her hair. Like, she didn't have to go to you. So why in the hell would you give her shit? Like, at least she's being honest with you. And instead of, I don't know, maybe losing your shit, you could have given her different options. Like, instead of spending $15 on box color, why don't you spend $22 on Karat color that you can get at, like, Ulta? And you can get a darker shade that will help gloss you up and it's still really healthy. Give different options. Start expecting people to be able to afford $50 bottles of shampoo. Research the shampoo you want. Start giving different budget-friendly options. Not everybody is out here making hella money that is able to spend all of this money. So when your clients are only coming in once a year, stop shaming them. That's not okay. Maybe they're a single mom. Maybe they don't have time and they're working or they're traveling. Like, there's so many things that go into it. Maybe their husband just lost his job. Like, you really don't know. So stop shaming people. That's not our job. Our job is to make them feel beautiful, to be very open and honest. Like, what is your budget today? How often do you want to be in the salon? How much do you want to pay to upkeep this? What is your budget for shampoo? If somebody's coming in and wanting pink hair and their budget is only like $100 and they're only going to be able to come in every 6 months, it is my job to tell them, I don't think that's going to be the best fit for you. How about instead, maybe we do like some pink tinsel or like something different. There are so many stylists out there that are very much of like, I think it's scared. I think the generation of salon owners, we're moving into this generation where my generation, I'll be 27 this year, we're figuring out who we are. We're not having kids at 18. We're not getting married at 18. I mean, I had my daughter at 20. But, like, that's being a wife and a mom is not our priority anymore. Owning a house is not our priority anymore. Our priority is surviving, really. It's to making a difference. It's breaking the cycle. So you have all of these salon owners that have owned a salon or they're set in their old ways. And are telling you like, oh, you have a non-compete. I'm going to go after you. I'm going to chase you. Why would you stop somebody, if you really did care about them, why would you stop them from doing something better, from going beyond? And I understand, like, I really think commission salons are starting to go out of style because as a commission salon owner, you're pouring all of this money into somebody new. You're barely making any money off of them. If any money at all, you're pouring money into them. You're getting them trained. You're giving them classes. And in return, they have to stay at least a year, most likely, or they're paying you back X amount of dollars. And I understand that. I did that. I was going to do that. So I completely understand that. But once you're 5 years in and you're topping out, is it really worth it? Is it really worth it? Because I went from having a full book of a full highlight, which takes an hour to do a full highlight. And then while she's processing, which is a half an hour, especially if you're starting with 10 volume, I'm doing another full highlight. How does that work? It doesn't, but I'm making these people so much money, so they don't care. That's where I really do think that commission salons are going to be left behind. That in the future, we're going to be going to more of a booth rent salon where you're paying this much rent. And yeah, like say, like, for instance, my salon loft, I have a micro salon. I have 3 salon chairs and I have a lash bed for lash tech. Say that I'm charging each person $300 to rent a chair for full time. The rent is $650 a week. I am now making a passive income if I'm having 4 girls in. I'm making a passive income, so I'm paying the rent, plus I'm making money. But in return, what are you providing these girls? For me, I'm providing a booking system that you don't have to provide, you don't have to pay for. I pay for all that. I'm providing back bar. I'm providing capes, towels, detergent, cleaning stuff, all of that stuff. And so, yes, as a salon owner, your job is to make money. That's kind of what it is being a small business owner. Your job is to make money. But it's also to provide these women with a comfort, with like all kinds of different trainings that you can offer, that you can take classes for. Like, you're still supposed to provide these women with a team, and a team needs a leader, and you are their boss. You are their leader. Granted, they make their own books, they schedule their own things, but you are their leader. So yeah, I do understand like commission salons need to make money, but in reality, it's not worth it for the hairstylist anymore. Going from a commission salon, being single and a single mom, to a business owner being single and a single mom that has her daughter full time was beyond hard. When I worked at a commission salon, my schedule was pretty laid out. Never worked extra. Every once in a while, I'd run over, but not often. And now I work every day. But now I'm capable of taking my daughter to school and picking her up. And to me, that is so important. It is important that she sees me picking her up and we get that time together right after school. It is important that I am dropping her off to school. I felt like my parents could never do that because they worked an 8 to 5, and I was so jealous of all these other parents pulling up to pick their kids up from school. Like, all my friends, their parents are picking them up. Why can't my parents pick me up? So I'm so happy that I get to do that with my daughter because I do own my own business. I own my own salon. I'm allowed to do almost whatever I want, which is very freeing. But dating is very hard, especially because I feel like a lot of men that I've went on dates with get very intimidated because I make more money. And if I don't make more money than them, then they make more than me, and that's okay. That's completely okay with me. But when you make more money from a man, I feel like sometimes they're like stripping their man card, their manly card, whatever you want to call it. They do not get very happy about that. And then they call you like a sugar mama. Like, oh, I've had, oh, are you going to split the date? Or are you going to split the food? And I'm like, okay, it's the second date, but I'll split it. Cool, whatever. It is so hard. And then also, like, I don't have time. They're like, oh, you work weekends? Yep, I work weekends. That's when my clients get it. When building my books over the next 2 years, 3 years, my books will be open majority of time for my clients because that's how you build books the fastest. Because once you have a client in for 2 years and you start to take every other weekend off, they're going to be more accepting to work around your schedule also. Now that you've worked with their schedule for 2 years, or like some of my clients I've had for longer than that. And that's just the game. That's just the hair industry. And yeah, you can change it and you can be like, no, I'm setting a boundary. I'm only working Monday through Friday, no weekends. They'll figure it out. But when you're building your books back up, to me, that's just unrealistic for me in my position. Yeah, so I'm always working weekends. So men are always like, oh, maybe during the week. I'm like, oh no, I can't. Like, I have to be home by 9:30 at the latest with my kiddos so we can get in bed. So then we can make sure that she's up in the morning. And they're like, oh. I've had some men tell me that like me having a kid is just not what they want because they want to be able to build a relationship of their own. Like, they want to be able to have that first kid, which I feel that when I was with my daughter's dad, I found out that he had a daughter also, and he was getting full custody. So I understand that, like, that definitely was very scary in the moment. And I'm not asking any man to be my daughter's stepdad. Like, no, I prefer you not meet her. I just, maybe other single parents or single moms or dads can like help speak for this. But it fucking sucks dating with kids. Like, I really don't know how my mom did it. Like, I'm so confused. I remember when my parents split up, I was like in third grade. My mom had hadn't had a boyfriend or anything. Then we met this guy named Phil, and she ended up marrying him. They were together for like 6-7 years, and then they divorced. I'm still close with him now, but like, when did she have time to go on a date? Because I don't really recall being at my dad's all that much. Where did you meet this man? How did you meet this man? Because I was like in fifth grade, so this was a long time ago. Like, I don't think there was dating apps. Maybe there was, but like, how did you meet him? I'm so confused. Now that there's dating apps, as my older brother says, he recalls to today's dating. He's 7 years older than me. He recalls to today's dating as fishing pools. He's like, all these women just have fishing pools and they're just in a lake. And then once you get a bite, you just reel it in a little bit and then you just keep it there. And then you get a bite on another one, you reel it in a little bit and you just keep it there. And when he was explaining this to me, I was actually laughing, because when you're dating nowadays, it is literally like, okay, go on a date here, go on a date there. Like, do you mesh? Do you not mesh? Are you talking or are we playing game? Like, how do you feel? And I feel like I am so direct as a person that I'm like, okay, well, I feel like this. And either A, I scare them away, or B, they're like, yeah, no, I don't feel that way. And I'm like, okay, cool. So do you want your stuff from my house? Never talk again. I don't know. I also feel like where I'm such a well-rounded person, a lot of men aren't, and a lot of people aren't well-rounded. And it blows my mind. Like, the things men have said to me is hilarious. Especially in dating. I've had one man tell me, he messaged me. He was like, okay, like, let's go on a date. I'm like, yeah, yeah, perfect. He sends me a picture of his dog. And I'm like, cute dog. Like, here's a picture of my dog. And he's like, I wonder how long you could give me head for. And I said, I'm sorry, sir, you said what to me? Like, what the fuck did you just say to me? I've had men just like randomly hit me up like, oh, I wonder, my other favorite was, I'm sure that we can go on a date. I'm going to wear the belt in that picture on Hinge. I'm like, okay, cool, cool, cool. And I don't know what you're getting, but like, all right, nice belt, whatever, man. He's like, and then I want to wrap it around your neck. I'm like, oh. Are we talking about like murdering me or like BDSM, BS, whatever the fuck that's called? Where are we going here? But also, sir, I've only been talking to you for like 24 hours. So that's a little much. That's a little much. I have dated a couple of people. I left my daughter's dad almost two years ago. And maybe it's been 2 years. Almost 3 years. I want to say it was like almost 2 years ago. May will be 2 years. So in a couple months will be 2 years. I'm not ever going to use real names for any of these people, legal reasons, but it was a really bad relationship, and we can get into that in another episode. Horrible relationship, but I basically kicked him out, left him. I started dating somebody right after, which was horrible on my end. I think I was just looking for, I guess, a rebound, somebody to make me realize or feel better or feel pretty, because it was a very bad, toxic relationship. Like, it was really, really, really bad. And I ended up leaving that guy, and basically he was doing the same thing. A lot less down. But he was like peeing in corners of my house. Like, I remember he peed on my nightstand. He peed in my clothes basket with all my clean clothes. And I had to go to work the next day and I was pissed. Like, sir, get your bodily fluids together. Finally, I had enough, and like, I did leave him. And then you get stuck in these like dating areas or like these talking stages, and it's fucking. And then like, I am such a driven person that my business will always come first before any man ever, because no man is paying my bills but me. And maybe that's just because I'm a single mom and I was raised by a single mom, and my mom always taught me like, Mom, I am a rich man. Like, if you know Cher, then you know, like, she told her mom that, like, Mom, I am a rich man. Like, I make my own money. I don't need a man to make money for me. And that's where I'm at now. And I still continue to be that way. And like I said before, it really hurts men. Like, some men just have such a big ego and it really hurts them. And granted, I've done a lot of shit in my past. Like, I was really upset. Like, me and this one guy broke up. Pray to God he never listens to this because it's quite funny. I remember he took me off. Like, I was really upset about this. And normally I can just be like, all right, whatever, it's fine. And I was like crying. I went out with a friend. I got roofied that night. My friend texted him, like, you're not even a real man. Like, this is bullshit. You're a fucking horrible person. Just going off. And so then he like basically stops talking to me. And I try to apologize and like explain the situation, but who's really gonna understand, like, oh, did you really get roofied, or are you just saying that? No, I was throwing up for like 48 hours straight on four drinks. I really got roofied. I don't even remember the night. And then like I got home and it's like weeks passed, and I'm like watching Hulu on his Hulu account. He like deletes my account but leaves me on his Hulu, and it pissed me off for some odd reason. Like, why would you do that? But also, like, why wouldn't you do that? And so I put this man through hell. And so then I added a account and I put it under MILF. When I say toxicity is, it is what it is. I put it underneath MILF, and I've like rekindled with him, and we're on good terms, like whatnot. Both understand like it didn't work, yada yada yada. I apologize. And he brought this up and I was like, oh, yeah, I did do that. He's like, yeah, my grandpa saw it because he's on there. I'm like, well, fuck. I'm so sorry. So when I say, like, I also get it, I'm a little crazy. I don't think I'm ever as crazy as what my daughter's dad was. I mean, I've done a lot of other crazy things, but that one, that relationship really fucked me up. That really had me like, oh shit. Like, that broke my heart. But it is what it is. We all move on. Like, at the end of the day, I have my daughter. She's like my miniature best friend. I have my dog, which is like a horse. And I have my. So, like, I'm good over here. Yeah, I would love to settle down one day, but like, there's no need to rush it. There's really no need to rush it. I'm 26. I still have my whole life ahead of me. There's no need to rush settling down. And my main concern is my business. And I know a lot of women don't feel that. And a lot of people don't feel that. But I do. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. On the next one, I think we're going to go deeper into toxic relationships because I left that door wide open. Hope everybody has a great night. And please follow, subscribe, leave me a review, a comment, whatever you want. Okay, how does this sound? Does this sound okay? Does this not sound okay?